I just want to tell the people what this process has been like, because it hasn't been, it's been fun, but it hasn't been easy.
My name's Elena.
I'm Cousin Eddie.
And my name is Aldo B. Martin. And this is the Reclamation Podcast finale. Yo, Cousin Eddie back in the house. You know, people have been asking me from the very beginning, where's Cousin Eddie?
Yeah.
Acting as if this is Andre 3000 and Big Boy. And they're asking me, where's Andre 3000? Like, did Outkast break up? And I'm like, I had no answers. I'm just like, listen, he's doing some other stuff. It was like, it was like the parents broke up. Mm-hmm. Mom, when's dad coming back?
Yeah, I went out for a pack of smokes. I never came back.
I'm like, yo, listen, he'll be back.
Yeah.
Just chill. Mm-hmm. Just chill.
I'm glad to have him back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's wonderful to be back.
And it's the three of us.
Yeah.
This is how it started.
Yeah.
Oh, man. How long has this been? It's been a year, over a year, right?
For the podcast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like so much longer.
It does.
Seems like a really, really, just amazing journey, but like an unexpected journey, but it seems much longer than it has been.
It's only been about 14 months.
Wow.
I think, Cousin Eddie, you and I, we recorded that first rehearsal. It might have been March 2021. Like, we rehearsed it. I think it was March 2021.
Yeah, because I think it was cold outside.
It was cold outside. And then we recorded that first actual episode interview, and I think that was late August 2021,
mm-hmm.
like Labor Day weekend. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
And so I just remember walking into Best Buy August of 2021, looking for a laptop and a microphone, and I remember the kid. There was a kid who helped me. I'm not going to say his name. There was a kid, a young kid. He was like 19-year-old kid. And I walk in, I'm looking at the laptops. I'm like, all right. I'm asking him questions. I'm like, does this do this? This is, he was like, yeah. And then I said, yo, you got microphones? He was like, microphones? Yeah, what are you looking to do? I was like, trying to do a podcast. He goes, oh, word? Yeah, what's your podcast going to be about? And I said, yo, you ain't even ready. Don't even ask me. Just show me where the mics are. He goes, nah, man, what's your podcast on? I was like, it's going to be on religious cults. And homie was like, oh, snap. I'm not ready. I said, I told you. Now where the mics at? So we go over and he shows me the mics and we're kneeling down. We're looking at, you know, there's some on the bottom shelf. He's like, yo, man, that's mad interesting. Why are you going to do this? He said, why religious cults? And I said, yo, you still ain't ready. He goes, I'm probably not, but go ahead. And I said, because I was in a religious cult. He was like, oh, snap. He didn't say, oh, snap.
I was supposed to say, did he say snap?
He didn't say snap. Modern, I don't know what these kids say nowadays.
More modern.
He probably said something, but in my mind, it just sounded like snap. I don't care what he said. It's like, I just saw his lips move.
Yeah.
No words were coming out other than the word snap. Right? Uh-huh. He probably says something like, oh, for real? On God? Like, I don't talk like that, okay? It's, oh, snap. Anyway, then I bought the material, brought it home. I think I bought three mics, mm-hmm. brought three microphones. And I was like, and I called this guy, said, yo, I'm ready.
Which guy?
Called Cousin Eddie.
Okay.
And I was like, yo, I think we're ready. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment, I was selecting music. Remember, I was picking music. Mm-hmm. I was going through so many different things, mm-hmm. so many mm-hmm. recordings. It was such an exciting time. Such an exciting, exciting time. And then here we are.
Now, besides the two of you just talking about this experience, because I think it was like a three-part... How many parts was it when you were telling your story? About five parts? Three or five parts, and you were telling your story. The beginning and the beginning stages of it.
Well, can I tell you something? That was an accident. That was an accident. Okay. See, because when I had the idea for the program, I had a list of about 10 to 15 people
mm-hmm.
that I wanted to interview for the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said no.
Mm-hmm.
They all said no, with the exception of Dr. Melton, Liz, and Christina. Mm-hmm. Everybody said no.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they didn't want to talk, which I understand, because right. we're talking about something that is potentially sensitive, and we hadn't done it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it hasn't been done before. Other people have done it, but we hadn't done it. So
right.
I don't blame those people for being intrepid and being cautious or hesitant, because they didn't know the kind of job that I was going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, come to think of it, if I was to ask me, I would say no too. Be like, yo, Aldo, you want to? Hell no, Aldo, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there like, well, damn. We can't have a podcast with just three episodes, including Cousin Eddie's and I,
mm-hmm.
making it four.
Mm-hmm.
So I then decided to take the interviews and split them up into parts, thus creating a longer series.
Right.
Right? Like a longer season. So
like your signature.
Yeah, that's how it started. Everyone. That's how it started. It was just out of necessity. It was just like that. So that's how that came about. So yeah, there were five parts of he and I speaking, but that became a necessity because mm-hmm. we had to give the people something. Initially, it was just going to be one conversation and we released that. Yeah, that's how that came about.
When you started, you know, having these conversations with Cousin Eddie and, you know, releasing these episodes, like, what did people reach out to you right away? Besides, you know, Dr. Melton and Liz and Christina, like, did people start, when did that happen? And what was your reaction? Like, wow, people are reaching out to me to talk about this.
Yeah, they started reaching out right away. And some of the people that reached out, those initial reach outs, if I can say that, was a little overwhelming. Because there were some people that reached out that I don't think they understood the nature of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not their fault, because they just heard one episode. They right. didn't know where this was going. You know, there was one person that reached out and said, hey, man, I love what you're doing. I want to be a guest on your show. I want to take down this church. They're teaching false doctrine and all this other stuff. And I'm like, whoa, hold on, buddy. It ain't right. that kind of party.
Right.
Right. And it was just too much. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there were some others that started asking me questions. Mm-hmm. We're like, hey, my friend is in this cult. My friend, what should I do? How can I? There were some people that literally responded to me thinking that I was a cult expert.
Right.
And I could walk them through the process of getting out. And I'm like, nah, I ain't that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand. I'm doing this from Homeboy Studios.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an expert.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped me understand that there's potential danger in this.
Mm.
Yeah. Where I could potentially say something, and I could say something reckless.
Right.
And one or two people could take it, you know, take it seriously and go another direction with it. So that helped me understand the potential of it. But then there were other people that just reached out, and it was just sincere.
Mm-hmm.
People who from other continents I've never been to, right? Other countries I've never been to.
How exciting was that? Like multiple states, multiple countries, like.
Oh, exciting. Is that the word? I don't know if exciting is the word. It was just a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of unbelievable, I would mm-hmm. think.
It was unbelievable.
Unreal.
It was unreal.
Yeah. You name some of the, what was the first unreal, like, continent or country that you saw and you're like, what?
When Russia invaded Ukraine, we started getting Russian downloads and I was scared. I was like, wait, what?
They were about to start an ICOC faction in Ukraine.
Like, what is going on? But no, but it was, I guess it was the countries getting contacts or downloads from countries that didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the fascinating part for me. Like, I know English is spoken just about everywhere, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact that people were listening from those places, mm-hmm, and somehow our story resonated with them, I thought that was really cool and really really humbling.
You mentioned how when people are reaching out to you, that when they reached out to you, you had to kind of decide what trajectory should I take this podcast?
Right.
You had to be think very critically.
Oh man, critically, you're giving me too much credit there. I had to fly the plane. Excuse me. I had to make the plane, build the plane as I was flying it. Mm-hmm. To be quite honest, I had to make adjustments all the time. Like, all right, so for example, when you came on the program, mm-hmm. right? We had already put out episode 1, episode 2, and episode 3. And we put that out the last week of November into December. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But all those conversations were already recorded a few months earlier. So right. to me, they were old. Mm-hmm. Like those things were recorded in August and September. But now it's being released in December. So to me, it's old. Yeah. But right. for the listener, it's new. Right. So the listener might have been under the impression that what they're hearing is a fresh recording.
Right.
And then what they're going to hear next week has been recorded, you know, live or something
they
like that.
They call that the Terminator timeline on this one podcast that I listen to because you think you're listening right then. And it's actually, they're giving you previous information.
Mm. Previous information.
Or at least within those couple of days, but it's actually weeks prior.
Mm-hmm. It's previous information. So, but as people were reaching out though, mm-hmm. right? Sending messages of support, asking questions. I didn't want the show or the podcast to continue and not have the people feel as if they weren't being heard.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Because we're talking about old stuff. Mm-hmm. So then when you agreed to come on the program, I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh, and then we could release a recap with Elena. Mm-hmm. We could release that recap every week, mm-hmm. like on a Wednesday.
Right.
Right. So it could be a way to interact with the audience in real time. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and a lot of people believe that you live in apartment 3B and that's not how you got your name. So here's how it went down. We put out episode 3 and then you heard it. Mm-hmm. And then we, recorded a recap.
Right.
After you heard it, which is like a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Right. And I didn't know what to call that episode because up to that point, I was just calling them episode 1, episode 2, episode mm-hmm, 3. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't know what to call your episode, so I just called it episode 3B because mm-hmm. it was an accompaniment to episode right. 3. Mm-hmm. 3B. So I had a friend of mine who I went to high school with. He called me. He might have texted me. I think it was he texted me. And he said, yo, man, I like the podcast, man. I like that episode. I can't wait to hear Homegirl, though. I was like, Homegirl? What Homegirl? He goes, Homegirl from 3B. And I was like, oh.
I actually didn't know the story behind that.
I was like, that's the name. Elena from 3B. And so it stuck. And so what's funny is that when people messaged and people said they thought you literally came, you know, I knocked on apartment 3B and we sat down and recorded.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how it went down. But, uh-huh. but instead it was the other way. You come down here to the basement yeah, and we record.
Yeah.
And that's how that went. And then there were people that asked me if you and I were cousins.
Uh-huh.
Like, so Cousin Eddie's your cousin? I'm like, he's not my cousin. he's not my cousin. He just goes by Cousin Eddie. So I thought it was through the messaging with people. The contact with people, messages turned into phone calls. Mm-hmm. Those relationships that were formed helped to drive the program, mm. the direction of the program
okay.
in many regards.
So was that exciting or nerve-wracking or scary? Or all that
it was fun. It was okay. fun. I loved every minute of it. There were some parts that, you know, were difficult, but no, it was fun. I appreciated mm-hmm. the input. I just appreciated that somebody was listening to me. Like, seriously.
But you had to wade through a lot of murky water.
What do you mean?
Well, there were some people that wanted to reach out to you for kind of nefarious reasons.
There were a few of those.
And that's the unfortunate thing about the social networking yeah. world that we're in is it's either one end of the spectrum that mm. they think you're going to do a hit piece, so they don't want to say a word to you, or it's people that are just like, yeah, let's get the torch and take mm-hmm. it down. And it's like, hey, man, I can't get too deep into this. I'm only, right. you know, you don't want any slander allegations brought against you. That's not the purpose. This is really, hey, I'm healing from this. If you guys want to heal with me, great. But that's the extent of my knowledge, and I can only tell you what I know.
But the idea for this podcast really came from this idea that I left this church, and then a few years after leaving, one day I have to piece that together exactly how many years, is when I came to the conclusion that it was a cult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I kept that conclusion to myself.
Right.
It wasn't like I was shouting it from the rooftops. It was after years of...
Was it like about 10 years or so?
Might have been a little less, but mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But it was like just examining what happened, what my thoughts were about it, and then realizing to myself, oh man, I was in a cult.
Right.
And there's a lot of shame to that. Like nobody wants to say they were in a cult. Nobody wants to admit that. So then the real purpose of the program was for me to explain to Cousin Eddie about how one can get drawn into a cult. Mm-hmm. That was really it. It wasn't about proving that the ICOC was a cult. It wasn't about claiming that they were a cult. It was just about, no, here's the mindset of a person that gets into one. Mm-hmm. And it's quite possible that many of us have probably been at the same mind state at some point in our lives, thus making us suspect or subject to being part of a cult in some way or another.
Mm-hmm. And the manipulation that surrounds
it. And so
who's a target.
And who's a target. And so it's not just yourself. You might know somebody like that.
Yeah.
Right.
It could be a family member. It could be a friend. So that's really what it was. It was meant to be an educational piece. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that at some point I have to name the organization, right? I can't just say it, you know, arbitrarily, but I had to name it just to give people some context.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So then somehow, some way, the program took a turn and mm-hmm. we started to prove, or I don't know if we proved it or if we've proved it, but then we started to talk about why we considered it a cult.
Right.
So that became part of the conversation, but that wasn't the initial part.
Right.
It was just talking about how somebody gets involved in a cult. And I hope people don't forget that part.
Right. What I would like for you to talk about too is as you're, you know, it seems like already from the beginning, it was just ever evolving with every conversation that you had with everyone who's reaching out to you, it was evolving. But at the same time as the podcast was evolving, like you literally were figuring out how to do a podcast. You were like the mechanics of it. How was that like learning? Okay, I've never did it. You know, in my mind, it's like the Flintstones. I don't know if you've ever seen the Flintstones.
I'm sorry, what?
The Flintstones. Let me tell you.
You just said, has anyone here seen the Flintstones?
Listen, there might be someone out who doesn't know what Flintstones is. It's a cartoon.
I feel like walking out. I feel disrespected.
I'm not saying that. Do you feel disrespected?
Have you seen the Flintstones?
Yeah, I didn't like watch it religiously.
That hesitation made me uncomfortable.
I didn't watch it religiously.
Well, it's a cartoon. I don't know what year it was made, but it's about a Stone Age family. So with this podcast, I feel like you had a thought, oh, you know, maybe I should create a podcast about this topic. You've never done it before.
No.
But you were so excited and you were all in. It's like Fred Flintstone getting in his car. Okay, see you later. Slams the door, then proceeds to pick up the car and then run with his bare feet. Like you're figuring out how to do this thing.
Right, right, right.
Wanting so much to get this content out, these conversations started, conversations going. And like, it's hard work. Like it's fun, right? We laugh, it's a banter, but then it hasn't been easy, has it?
Well, I'm still trying to process you referring to me as Fred Flintstone. I just
in the sense of
I'm just trying to see
he
myself.
He gets in a car. You think, okay, driving is easy. It makes life easier.
Yeah,
you can get to places faster.
All right.
But then you literally have to put, you know, he had to put his feet to the ground and like, it is hard work. So sometimes someone may listen to this podcast and think, oh, wow, this is great. Oh, this is easy. I'm going to make a podcast. And it's like, no, you literally, like, you're going to get blisters on your feet. Like, it is hard work to make it, you know, everyone sound in their best light. You know, you want to make everyone, you know, sound good. You want to respect everybody. You want it, the quality. I mean, you're trying to figure out the mechanics.
That was well said, lady.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, there have been other people that have done podcasts about the ICOC mm-hmm. before I started.
Right.
There have been people who have done YouTube channels, such as Losing My Religion, before I ever started. Right.
Right,
so
right.
I'm certainly not a pioneer in this. I'm not the founder in this.
Right.
Right. And obviously, podcasts have been around for a while. So
yeah.
I'm just a guy. But speaking to the level of work, man, it took a lot of effort. After a while, what I didn't realize what was going to happen is that I was going to love this process of podcasting so much.
Mm.
At some point, I think very early, I think from the beginning, it became the first thing I thought about when I woke up, and it became the last thing I thought about before I went to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even have dreams about it.
I remember when I was working at this AV company, and we would do these things called upfronts. But it made me realize, to your both your points, it is a full-time job to do something like this. You know, someone asked me one time, they said, hey, can you do my social media and website? And I said, I can't. Like, you genuinely have to pay me. I when I used to post things for my band, all I would post is maybe a link to the show, post the poster to Instagram, to Facebook, and you have to change the sizes and do all the proportions for each one of those things. That would take hours alone just to post that one thing to make sure everything was perfect. I mean, it's doing this podcasting is a full-time job.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to give Aldo props for this because, as you said, it's many hours.
Yeah.
It's like a full-time job, but this wasn't the only thing you were doing. What else were you doing?
I was living life. I was living life. I'd wake up in the morning, grab my laptop and do some editing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd get ready for work. I would take whatever it is that I was editing. Let's say I'd recorded an interview, right? Let's say I record an interview with, I don't know, whoever. Let's say the person's name is Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Record an interview with Bob.
Shout out to Bob.
Shout out to Bob. he did great, by the way. But I would take this interview with Bob, you know, have it in my computer. As soon as I wake up, you know, listen to it, get ready for work. And then I would take that interview and airdrop it into my phone. So then when I get in my car and drive to work, I'm actually listening to the interview. That's mm-hmm. part of editing is listening.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of listening. There's mm-hmm. no way around it. So now as I'm driving to work, I'm listening. But what I'm listening for is sound quality. I'm listening for what can be removed, you know, all these other things. And then I get to work and I do what I do. And then I leave work. And as soon as I leave work, I'm pressing play. I'm listening to the interview again. And then as soon as I get home, I do some touch-ups with that. And then I would take my youngest son to soccer practice, right? As we're driving to soccer practice, me and him are in the car, and we're lip-syncing to Lauryn Hill. Me and I have karaoke parties in the car. You know what I'm saying?
Your own carpool karaoke?
Oh, yeah. He's 12 now, but he and I have been doing this since he was young.
Mm-hmm.
So, yo, we have a good time. So I'm taking him to practice, and while he goes onto the field, I go off into the stands with my laptop. And what am I doing? I'm editing. And then I come home, right? Then I come home and then I'm making dinner. While I'm making dinner, what do? I got my headphones on. What mm-hmm. am I doing? I'm listening. I'm listening to edit, right? And then you and I would spend time together, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm still a husband. So you and I are spending time together. And then we got my other son. I'm taking him to his baseball game,
mm-hmm.
right? I haven't missed a single game for all of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
A single game. Take them to what they got to do. And while he's playing his baseball game, I'm in the stands editing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get home, just before going to sleep, I'm doing some more editing. And then I wake up and repeat.
Yeah.
And it's every day. So mm-hmm. I fell in love with that whole process. And I was still living a life and still putting together a podcast, but it didn't matter to me because mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. You understand?
Right.
And I don't want the audience to get the impression that I'm this super organized guy or super motivated and driven guy. No. I have all my faults. There's things that I get bored with easily. There's projects that I stop, that I start and stop. There's times when I don't feel like doing stuff. No, that's who I am at the core. You understand?
Right. Mm.
But this podcast thing just became something else. I mean, to the point that I was like, wait, what if I was to do another podcast?
Yeah.
About another topic.
Mm.
Wait a second. I could do another one.
Yeah.
And then it went from there. So it's just been a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but I can't tell you that I've been slaving. I can just tell you I've been having a lot of fun. You know,
yeah.
Just think about the thing, something that you do that you like doing,
mm-hmm.
you would spend hours doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without even thinking it.
Yeah.
So I hope that made sense, but that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
There was a lot going down in the streets.
So I think you mentioned it already, but what was
shout out
most...
to the streets.
Streets is watching.
So you might
hopefully the streets is listening, but go ahead.
You might have touched on it already. So with that being said, was that your
his face is turning red. Look at this guy.
I'm sorry, that was so stupid, but it was hilarious. I'm sorry, Leah.
No, it's okay. Okay. So what's your most enjoyable part of this process, and what's the least enjoyable?
So the most enjoyable part was connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
People that have become friends nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? They started off as friends of the program, then they became friends of mine.
Right.
Right? Because now we communicate regularly. Right. They talk about stuff. They tell me how the program has helped their life.
Sure. Yeah.
Like that's a heavy.
Yeah.
That's a heavy responsibility, I feel.
Mm.
Like even though I'm not responsible for that, but it's you think that I did something that helped your life.
It's a great benefit.
I have to respect that.
Right.
You know, I have to respect that. And so, you know, connecting with people in that way and I didn't befriend everybody,
mm-hmm.
but there was some way to connect with people. So I think that's been the most fun part of all of this. And also, I think just expressing a part of my personality that I didn't really think that I had,
mm.
right? Finding a desire and a love for something that I didn't think existed.
Huh.
The self-discovery. I think the self-discovery has been phenomenal. So that's those two things have been really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were any parts that were not so enjoyable?
There's a couple. There's a couple.
Anything that you can mention?
Mm.
I mean,
I'm gonna try to say it as best I
the
possibly
most
can.
The respectful end.
Because here's the thing, right? I don't speak for anybody. I'm not the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the representative. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel a responsibility to the audience to not allow them to be disrespected.
Right.
It's not so much for me. Listen, you can disagree with me all you want.
Right.
Ask me if I care. I don't. So in those instances when I've had to defend the audience, that's not fun because that's not what I enjoy doing.
Right.
You understand? So
when people are telling this story or a former member.
Yeah.
Tries to tell this story to someone who is not in an organization. For example, Cousin Eddie, like you know, you're not religious. You had no kind of connection to this. So Aldo's telling you this story and you're like, I hear you. I'm here to support you, but I don't really understand. And it's going to be hard for some people.
Well, and you interrupt anytime you want on this. Here's the thing, though.
What are you guys
going to
say?
No,
I just wanted to interrupt him because he's going to interrupt him anytime.
But here's the thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
I had an advantage because, look, for the record, Cousin Eddie and I were not the type of friends that hang out every day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We would literally see each other, hang out with each other for a little while, and then wouldn't hear from each other for weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple months. Right? And then when one of us would call the other, we'd just pick up right where we left off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong. It seemed like I might not have seen him in a year.
Yeah.
But it felt like yesterday.
Right, right, right.
Okay. So over the years, he and I have tried to collaborate on different projects.
Yeah, wasn't I supposed to be the receptionist in one of those projects?
Oh, that was the last project. So correct me if I'm wrong here. So then when I had this idea about the podcast, naturally, the thought was, we got to call Cousin Eddie for this. We tried this, we tried that. I was like, hey, I got another idea. He's like, what is it? I was like, a podcast. I like it. Mm-hmm. What's it about? It's about cults. What? I like it. Did I misrepresent anything? Is that the way it went?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So therefore, I was fortunate enough to have somebody who I have a history with of working on different projects with and having difficult conversations with at the same time. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it wasn't difficult. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope for the audience, I hope they have a Cousin Eddie. Mm-hmm. I hope they have an Elena. I hope they have somebody that they can talk to. I'm sorry?
An Aldo.
I mean, let me tell you something. There's only one Aldo in these streets. No, but seriously. But I hope they have somebody who's willing to listen to them. Mm-hmm. Because that makes the whole thing that much easier. Mm-hmm. You know?
At the end of season two, you were done. You were resolved that the reclamation was finished, or so you thought.
Yeah.
Now here we are at the end of, you know, season three, done.
Yeah.
Now you say that you're ready to conclude the season, conclude this podcast.
Yeah.
Please talk me through your final thoughts.
That's a lot, man.
You know what? Let me add on to that and just say, hey, start from the beginning.
Why don't you start at the beginning? Now there's a question. Before meeting all of you, before recording a single episode, before getting the requisite equipment or the necessary tools to even begin a podcast, and before I had a clue, to be quite honest, I was alone with my thoughts. I was alone with my thoughts and I asked myself, what do I want to accomplish with this podcast? I thought about that for a long time. I thought that was a really important question. And the only answer that I could come up with was hope. I hoped that I would create something that others would accept. I hoped that at the end of the podcast, when all my work was done, I hoped to have created something that would help someone else dig through their own personal turmoil, dig through their own internal wreckage. I hoped that something would lead such a person to the Reclamation Podcast. I hoped that after digging through the ruins of their own thoughts and their own memories, I hope that something said in the podcast would help them find their way, would give them something that they needed to hear, but they didn't know they needed to hear it. You understand? That's what I hoped for. And I thought, if I was able to do that, if I was able to just do a fraction of that, then I would have accomplished something in this life. You've heard me talk to many guests on the program. You've heard me talk about different people, different subjects, different topics, a variety of things, a variety of people. If you don't mind, I would like to talk about myself just for a little bit. I'd like to introduce myself to you and let you know how I think and how I process and how I've processed this whole reclamation podcast experience. First and foremost, I just want to let you know that I operate from a place of insecurity. That's my base. That's what I operate from. Over time, I've learned to work around that. You know, I've learned to work around my insecurity, how to maneuver around that. But it's still there. It's still there. As much as I've tried to get rid of it, it's still there. Right in the middle of the room. I've never been quite able to get rid of it. With that being said, I consider myself to be a complicated guy. If someone were to tell you that I'm a good guy, well, they would be telling the truth. And if someone were to tell you that I'm a jerk, well, they too would be telling the truth. You see, I'm a lot of different things. I'm a decent guy to some people. I'm a malcontent to some others. I have good days and I have bad days. I have days where I feel great about myself and I have days where I don't feel so great about myself. I have days where I move with a pep in my step, right? You know those kinds of days. And most days, I have to work really hard to motivate myself. Some days are sunny. Most days are cloudy. And that's who I am. I hope that you can relate. With all that being said, I find value in the small things in life. I find the small things to be of the most importance, you know? For example, I do my best to teach my sons that time is one of the most valuable entities that we have in this life. You know? Time just can't be replaced. It just can't. And because I find time so valuable, I want to thank you, the audience. I want to thank you for giving me your time. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to me. I want to thank you for taking the time to give me a chance. Time. Your support and your time has meant a great deal to me. And I'll never forget that. Ever. I began this program by attempting to explain what the world looked like to me, an 18-year-old kid who thought that he had nothing going for him in life. I was an 18-year-old kid who had a difficult time finding value in himself. I was a kid who was hoping to find a better way to live life. All these factors combined is what put me in a position where I handed over pieces of myself to what I believed was a better alternative. That's what I did. You know, the intent of this program was not to prove that the ICOC was a cult. Actually, the intention of the program was bigger than that. The intention of the program, the intention behind the program was to shed light on the complications of humanity. Yeah? The complications that would allow a person like myself to get drawn into a religious cult. Doesn't matter what the cult was, it's the fact that I got drawn into something like that. That was the point. I hope that through the stories that I told, that we told, that you, the audience, I hope that you would understand that anyone who is in a state of despair, a state of vulnerability, anyone who's going through that internally, they can become a subject, or they can be subject to joining a cult, is what I mean. And therefore handing over pieces of themselves to another person or another organization. Do you understand that? I hope you do. I hope we conveyed that message to you clearly. I hope so. You see, because such a story, this story of handing over pieces of yourself to someone or to another organization, such a story goes beyond the ICOC. It goes beyond the ICC. Such a story speaks to our humanity. It speaks to our need to be accepted. It speaks to our need to belong. These primal needs make it difficult to leave such an organization. And I really hope that this podcast has helped you understand that. The program went from one voice to a collection of voices. There were voices that you've heard on the different episodes, yeah? So many different voices. A collection of voices. But then, there were those silent voices that were behind the scenes. The voices that you, the audience, didn't hear from. These are the people that have reached out to me in private, right? They've sent messages or made calls. And you know, as I think about that, the people that the silent voices of the show, the people in the background, the people that never came forward to tell their stories. I'll tell you something that I've never shared publicly. You know, of all the messages that I've received, and there's been quite a few. It's been quite a few. But of all the messages that I've received, I think the most memorable messages are the ones that say, thank you for creating a space for others to share their stories. Even if I'm not ready to share my story yet. That speaks volumes to me. It says, to me anyway, it says that even if that person hasn't spoken on the podcast, they feel as if they are a part of the podcast. And you know what? They are. They've added to the spirit of the podcast. They've added to the continuity of the podcast. They've added to the purpose of the podcast. They've added to the collection of the stories by lending validation to those that have spoken already. That's what I think they've done. So the members of this podcast are the ones that have spoken and the ones that have listened and validated. That's what I think about it. I did my best. I did my best to craft a podcast that told the story of the ICOC experience. I did my best to be honest and to discuss all the elements that I've experienced. But you know what? I'm afraid that even with my best effort, there are still some things that I missed. And there might be some things that I've misunderstood. I think that's just the reality of it. And you know what? If I've erred, if I've made mistakes here and there, I hope that you forgive me. I hope that you forgive me. I did the best that I could. I remember joining the church in 1995. I remember the excitement of being a part of something that was bigger than myself. I remember that at 18 years old. But I also remember getting kicked out of the church in 1996. And I got kicked out because I was no longer zealous. I was struggling with depression. That's what it was. I was struggling with depression. I didn't know back then that it was depression, but my perceived reality of life was hitting me really hard back then. Way back when I was turning 19. And I just didn't know how to cope with that. I was in the church, but I was no longer happy. I was no longer out of myself, as the saying goes. I was depressed. Again. And I was told that if I was going to be like that, then this church wasn't the place for me. And I was shown the door. I was devastated. It was a dark time. But then I eventually made my way back. And I rejoined. I got restored in 1998. And I finally left the church in 2004. Little did I know that leaving was just the beginning. It was just the beginning because I had to live my life. I had to find a way to stabilize myself. Because let me tell you, I was far from stable. I was filled with anger. I was filled with sadness. I was filled with confusion. And with all that, I still had a life to live. I had a life to reclaim. I had a life to reclaim. And by grace, I think I was able to do that. I think so. And I did four things. There were four things that I did. There were four things that I did to reclaim my life, to reclaim my story. The first thing that I had to do was I had to forgive myself. I had to forgive myself. I think about all the times that I've been taught to forgive others, but I was never taught to forgive myself. I had to be kind to myself. Because over and over again, I would ask myself, how could I be so stupid? How could I let that place dictate who I was? How could I allow such a thing? How could I become a member of a cult? How could I let myself become a member of a cult? How? That's what I would ask myself often. Many years after leaving, anyway. But at some point, I had to practice self-compassion. I had to acknowledge that that it happened, and I had to give myself some grace. I had to forgive myself. The second thing that I did was I went inward. I went inward. I didn't go outward. I went inward. I didn't look for another church. I didn't look to be a part of another group. I didn't want to be in tune with another organization. I wanted to and needed to become in tune with myself. I needed to find out what produced good and bad energy in me. I had to go inward to find those answers. Inward. I sought out therapy, psychotherapy. I worked with a psychologist who helped me delve inward.
That's what she helped me to do. She helped me to delve inward, with her help. It's kind of like swimming with a lifeguard. Swimming with a lifeguard on duty is what I mean. My therapy sessions were 90% of what was happening internally with me. Those sessions helped me to untangle my thoughts, untangle my memories, and equip myself for when the insecurities came up. I started discovering who I was and why I was. I went inward. The third thing that I did was I had to take control of my life. I had to set boundaries, because boundaries would allow me to set the parameters around my life that would make me function in a manner that was conducive to my well-being. I had to place limits on my surrounding relationships. I had to place limits on what I wanted to do and what I didn't want to do. You know, in the church, I've spent so many years just going along to get along because I had no boundaries. And you know what? Now that I think about it, part of the reason why I joined the church was because I had no boundaries. That's part of it. And this lack of boundaries is what allowed me to lose myself. I didn't want to do that anymore. I began to place a limit on who I was going to give myself to. I decided how much of myself I was going to give and where I was going to give it. I made decisions that would honor my past self and allow my current self to flourish. I had to set boundaries. And the last thing that I did, I became selective. I became selective. I began to value my time. I began to value my efforts. And I began to recognize the people around me that valued those things too. I began to seek out relationships that were reciprocal. Reciprocal. As a member, I handed over pieces of my life, or pieces of myself, rather, to the organization. You see, in the church, some of you might remember this, we were taught to entrust ourselves to the people around us simply because they were fellow members, or because they were our leaders. I didn't want to live like that anymore. I decided to pick and choose who I was going to give pieces of myself to. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I understand some of these ideas might sound selfish to some people, and they might not be for you, but you know what? It worked for me. And I just wanted to let you know that the person that you're hearing now, I don't know how I sound to you. I don't know how you perceive me, but whatever it is that you perceive me as, I want you to know that what you're hearing is the result of a process that is still ongoing. You know, I haven't perfected any of these ideas that I've mentioned. I'm still working on forgiving myself. I'm still training myself to search inward. I'm still teaching myself to set boundaries. I'm still learning to be selective. I'm still learning these things. And if I'm being honest, it's been a tiresome journey, man. It's been a really tiresome journey. However, I'm better at these things now than I was before. but I still have a long way to go. And I'm okay with that. Because I know that one day I'll find my place in the sun. One day I'll get it right. One day. As I think about the conversations that I've had with people behind the scenes regarding this podcast, one person asked me if I could talk to myself right before joining the church, what would I tell myself? Now, there's another thought. That's quite the thought, because now we're going back in time a little bit, right? Or a lot of bit. Is that a phrase? A lot of bit? Well, it is today. It is today. What would you tell yourself? Let me ask you, the audience, what would you tell yourself? What would you tell your younger self? I want to pause for a minute. And I want to allow you to consider, what would you tell yourself before attending your first church service, before becoming a member? What would you tell yourself? That's quite the thought. For me, I go back to Sunday, July 30th, 1995. Don't ask me why I remember the date. Don't ask me. I just do. That's the first time that I visited church. It was in Central Park. And now that I'm going back to that moment in time, I'm remembering it all. I'm remembering me. I can see myself. I could see the 18-year-old me. I see him. He's wearing a Yankee hat, by the way. I see him, and I know that there's a hope inside of him. There was a hope inside of him at that time. And he was hoping that that this is what he's been looking for. I know that's what he's thinking. And what would I tell him? I'd go over to him and I'd give him a hug. I'd give him a hug. And then I'd grab his shoulder. I'd put my left hand on his shoulder, rather. And I'd say, Aldo, life is going to be okay, man. But don't lose yourself. Go on with the church. Enjoy yourself. But don't lose yourself. That's what I would tell the 18-year-old me. I wouldn't say, don't do it. I wouldn't say that to him. Because that 18-year-old kid needed a lot of help and a lot of support. And he found it there. Temporarily. That 18-year-old kid didn't know what he was doing. That 18-year-old kid was looking to belong somewhere. That's what he was looking for. And I wouldn't stop him from that. I wouldn't stop him from being happy. Instead, I would simply guide him and help him to believe in himself. And I'd remind him and tell him not to lose himself. That's what I would say. You know, we've come to the end of the Reclamation podcast. This is it. I hope that the program has been worth your while. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I hope that you've heard something that resonated with you. I hope that you have a favorite episode. I hope that you have an episode that you don't like at all. I hope you have a favorite guest. As a matter of fact, I hope you have a few favorite guests. As a matter of fact, I hope you have a guest that you don't like. I hope it ain't me, though. I hope that you've looked forward to listening on Sundays. I hope that you got mad at me for the cliffhangers. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I like the cliffhangers, though. That's my favorite part. I hope that you've laughed with some of the guests. I hope that you've cried with some of the guests. I hope you nodded your head in agreement. I hope you shook your head no in disagreement. I hope that this podcast has been an experience for you. I hope that you felt heard. I hope that you felt validated. I hope that you felt seen. I hope that you felt a sense of community. I hope that you found some joy. I hope that you found reactions in you that ran the full range of humanity. I hope that you realize that this process of healing requires work and it requires effort. And I hope that you continue doing your work. Most importantly, I hope that you've reclaimed your story. That's what I hope for you. And now, as I think about the end of this podcast, I think about the future listeners of the program. I think about those that will find the podcast when I'm long gone from here. I think about the person who's going through a dark time. That's what I think about. A person who's going through a dark time and going through their own personal wreckage. I sincerely hope that they'll find the Reclamation Podcast in the middle of their personal despair. And I hope that they can find use in something that I've left behind. I hope that something said on this program will help them in this life. As I conclude, my favorite author, James Baldwin, comes to mind. He comes to mind. At the end of James Baldwin's life, when he knew he was dying, he gave a summation of his own life. He gave a summation. And he said, "I pray that I've done my work, so that when I've gone from here, and all the turmoil, through the wreckage, and the rubble, and through whatever, when someone finds themselves digging through the ruins, I pray that somewhere in that wreckage, they'll find me. Somewhere in that wreckage, they can use something that I have left behind. And if I've done that, then I've accomplished something in life. Take care."